Welcome to The Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. The 2005 publication of Jarhead changed author and former sniper Anthony Swofford's life. The Gulf War memoir became a bestseller and inspired a film adaptation starring Jake Gyllenhaal. Swofford's follow-up memoir, Hotels, Hospitals, and Jails, examines his life after war and his complicated relationship with his family. Swofford recounts nights of excess and sexual conquest, visits with injured war veterans, and a near-fatal car crash. He also explores his difficult relationship with his father, a philandering, once hard-drinking, now terminally ill Vietnam vet. It is a great pleasure to welcome Anthony Swofford to The Book Show. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Joe.
Obviously, when you have a book like Jarhead that is very successful, it spawns a movie that's successful, I assume there is then pressure on you to do something else in the literature world.
Well, there was lots of pressure that I put on myself, of course, to produce another book. And I did that with a novel that came out in 07 that was somewhat military themed. But I do think that many readers were expecting a book from me that was somewhat a follow-up to Jarhead. And that wasn't the next book that I wanted to write. And I, in some ways, really just stumbled upon Hotels, Hospitals, and Jails as a book to write when in the spring of 2009, my father invited me to join him on an RV trip from Northern California to Montana. And in the middle of the trip, about 12 hours into the trip, we were east of Wells, Nevada, and my father reached out across the, I was driving, and my father reached out across the cabin and grabbed my arm and said, "Hey, son, I think there are some things we need to talk about," which was one of the greater understatements of the world, certainly of the trip. And I have to give my father a lot of credit because he made that gesture. And I have many male friends who have similar kinds of relationships with their fathers. And when I tell them that my father did this, that he reached out across and said, "Let's talk," and they say, "Oh, wow, my father would never have made that gesture. He never would have made the effort." And so that effort and that gesture was one thing. And then it took a lot of time together, boxed up in this RV, for us to, in many trips, it took really three trips for us to come to a place of reconciliation and peace. And that was a difficult road for us to both travel.
It seems in your account, and if I'm reading this wrong, let me know, but it seems as though he almost had an attitude that was, "You can't believe the life that I've lived," and meanwhile, you've lived a very similar life in many ways.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think he recognized the life that I was living. I think like a lot of fathers, he saw himself before he saw me, and he had a difficult upbringing. His mother died when he was a month old, and that's the first worst scar I think that any child can ever suffer. And he's almost 71 years old, and he's still bearing that today. And he recognized that his service in Vietnam colored our childhood and colored the way our home worked. But he was always, that was kind of his excuse. And he wanted to just move on from what our childhood had become and have this a relationship of two pals now. And I was kind of stubborn, and I wasn't really willing to let it just go by that simply, that we could just say, "Okay, let's be adults now." And that may have been me, becoming the 12-year-old yet again in front of my father. I guess, we're all 12 years old when we walk into the room with our parents. And I had a bit of an axe to grind. That's what the reader gets in these pages is two men who've been to war themselves, at war again, but with each other, and working their way through some, emotional minefields.
There's a lot of things that I... a lot of follow-ups to what you just said, but let me begin with what there is about the quintessential road trip that is so perfect for this type of discovery and psychological journey.
Well, my father loved the road, and when we were kids, those were the vacations that we took. He's a big fan of national parks, and those were our summer vacations. And we were often on the road, sometimes in some kind of jalopy that he'd fashioned together that he called a trailer, but was really, I'm not really sure what it was, plywood, 2x4s, duct tape, and somehow we made it cross country in these things. So there was this history from my childhood of travels on the road, and he became sick in the late 90s with COPD, and he bought this massive RV, and it was how he was still going to be out in the world and be a man and see the country that he really loved, that he loved deeply, that he'd fought for. And so then when he brought me along for this trip, it became, I think, an iconic kind of trip, father and son, lost in many ways, both of us, but together in this Winnebago, cooking down the highway at 70 miles an hour, seeing America and really being forced to look at each other and see one another and work through whatever kinds of troubles were in the air.
Do you think that your wife and not so much the relationship specifically with your father, but how you behaved after getting out of, after leaving the service, that your life would have been different without the great success of the book, the money, the film, and so forth that came with that?
Well, I think the money gave me a certain kind of freedom in terms of travel and movement. But you know, after all, I was a 30-year-old man living in New York City, and I was single, and I was an ex-Marine. And I would say that my time in the Marine Corps and my service at combat colored my behavior more than the publication of a book. The publication of Jarhead, you know, happened to be, that book was about my time in the Marine Corps at war. But I write in the early pages of Hotels, Hospitals, and Jails that I'd survived war, and I lived with this thrilling, intoxicating knowledge that I had come close to death, but I'd lived. And I know a lot of combat veterans, and I know that they're afflicted with that. And it can be a wonderful, heady, intoxicating thing, but it can also cause you to drive your car off of cliffs again and again and to live your life in an extravagant way. And risk-taking just became second nature to me. It was the way I lived. And I would say that the stamp that the Marine Corps put on me has more to do with that than the publication of a first book.
And I did think about this in reading the book without getting overly psychological, is that you wonder if, yes, that experience, how that forms the life after service, and how much of your growing up with a father who was a veteran and what you lived through made you the soldier that you were, in that risk-taking.
I think I was very prepared when I landed on the yellow footprints at San Diego in 1988. I was very much prepared for the life of the military. I'd grown up on military bases, and I knew the lifestyle, and I knew the sacrifices as well because I'd seen it with my father. I knew the sacrifices my mother made when her husband was off in Vietnam and she was raising two children and then pregnant with me. So I knew the costs of combat and of service. And I also wanted to be very close to that flame. I wanted to follow in my father's footsteps. And I wanted to better him too, because I think that's what all sons want to do. And so my father had been in the Air Force, so I joined the Marine Corps, and I was going to be a grunt and a rifleman and at the tip of the spear and all of those romantic things that really got me off when I was 18 years old.
And you're a sniper, and the job is to kill people. And you write about this beautifully in Jarhead of what of that experience and how it fundamentally changes you. But we see in this book of how, yes, those changes have really severe consequences where you question everything, not just relationships, but whether you want to live or die.
I do. I should say that the one of the main battles in Jarhead is that I'm trained this way, and it's what I want. I want to pull that trigger, and that kill is not, I'm not allowed that kill, and that haunts me.
Right.
And I come to feel that it was for the better. But that training is still part of how I live. It's an indelible stamp, and it's always there. And for many years, I tried to hide it. I tried to ignore it. I tried to pretend that it wasn't there. But it was part of how I lived, and it was part of who I was. And, you know, that's why I can step into a room full of Marines and be totally comfortable. And I know their language, and I know their codes, and I know what everything means in that room sitting full of Marines. And out in the real world, I don't always know the codes and I don't understand everything, but with other veterans, I'm always aware of what's happening and what things mean.
And what's fascinating about that is that is fairly constant, whether it's a veteran of World War II or Vietnam or of Afghanistan, when it comes to the brotherhood of the Corps.
Yeah, it is a real brotherhood, and people... I used to think that was a cliche and not really true, and I tried to stay away from Marines as often as I could and didn't look for the brotherhood. But once Jarhead came out and I was out publicly often talking with veterans, and you know, often Marines will find their way toward me because I wrote this book about the Marine Corps. And there's a real brotherhood, and it could be a Korean War vet or a Vietnam War vet or a young kid who fought in Fallujah. And we have some shared experiences, a shared history, and as well a shared knowledge.
Anthony Swofford is our guest on the book show. He is the author of the new memoir, Hotels, Hospitals, and Jails. The title comes from the places that you spent a lot of time in.
I spent some time in those places. There are some physical places, and the hotels, I was traveling a lot. I was all over the world. Hospitals, where my older brother died in the late 90s, and where I met my father after he became sick in 99. And, you know, at the end of the book, where my daughter is born. And there are also psychological places. The kinds of institutions that we build for ourselves and that I certainly built for myself. And I had, after many years, kind of locked myself in a kind of jail and in a way of thinking and really in a despondency that was a result of extravagance and extravagant living in New York City for many years. And taking those RV trips with my father, spending time in his Winnebago, cruising down the road at 75. It helped me to understand him. It helped me crack the code of my father and understand that regardless of our past, and know that regardless of our past, I loved him deeply. There's a scene in the book where I've gone on a run outside of a hotel just west of Houston, and I'm very out of shape at the time, even more out of shape than I am now. And I'm pretty certain I'm going to have a cardiac event on the side of the road. I've decided to go on a run when it's about 100 degrees out, and I end up hitching a ride back to the hotel from an old lady. And I jump in the hotel pool, and I'm looking at my father. He's inside the RV, and he's administering the medicines that he must to keep his lungs going. And I'm floating in the pool and looking at him, and I realize he has this Clint Eastwood fantasy of himself as the Western man, as the loner, and as the stoic. And I realize that really he's sadly just a kind of lonely old guy who's philandering and behavior over the years ended up ending his marriage and ending his family. And it scared me. It scared me to death. It shook me to my core. And I jumped out of that pool and I said, "Hey, Dad, I need to head home." And I did. I need to head home and I need to start living differently. Because I'd been living like him. I'd been that same kind of man. And, you know, lucky for me, very shortly after that, I met the woman who would end up being my wife and who I'd end up having a daughter with, and be able to, in a way, break that cycle that I thought was unbreakable from my father to me. And, you know, I love my father. He was somewhat a failure as a father. And my mission now is to be a good father and to be a man who's living his life differently and defining manhood differently than my father did.
You had one failed marriage and many, many relationships. And so, yeah, you must have been scared to see what you could have become.
Yeah, I was deeply scared. I was about to turn 40, and you know, I had, thinking about my father, he checked out on our family probably around the time he was 42 or 43. And I had already lived that crazy life. I'd already wrecked an expensive sports car. I'd lived excessively and drank excessively and lived kind of foolishly in my 30s. And I was about to turn 40, and I thought, I'm going to stop this now. And I'm going to go after this different kind of life. And I'm, you know, despite myself, I had been living much like my father. I wanted more than anything to not live like my father, but I was living like him. And so I had to really put the brakes on that and alter my course.
I would think that writing about, well, obviously writing personally, writing about family is tougher even than writing about war.
It was. This is the toughest book I've written. I had to write about my father and my family, warts and all, and it's not always pretty. There's nothing in the book that will surprise anyone in my family. All of these things are, you know, events that people know. They know the stories just as well as I do. We're a storytelling clan. But it was difficult to put a lot of it down on paper. The book ends with my daughter Josephine sitting on my father's lap, and the book ends. It's surprising for me the way the book ends. When I started writing this book, I had no idea where it would end. I knew that I was locked in this kind of psychological combat with my father, and I knew that I'd take a couple RV trips with him, and I also knew that I'd write about my brother's passing and just how that tore my family up. And I'd write about my own behavior in the aftermath of going to combat and in the aftermath of the publication of my first book. But I didn't know where it would end. And when this trip out to California to bring my daughter to meet my father because he couldn't make the trip out west, when it ended with her sitting on his lap, I sat back and smiled and savored the moment. And I knew that, you know, being a mercenary writer, I knew one thing, that I would use this, that this was how I would end this book that started pretty messy, that started with a lot of darkness between me and my father. But it would have this ending with my beautiful daughter on my father's lap, and the circles closed then.
And you, and the book ends also with you having your daughter meet your dad, and your dad's ill, and you don't know if this is going to be the last time you see him or that your daughter sees him.
Yeah, I wanted my father to be able to make the trip out east to visit and to meet Josephine, but he couldn't. And so I thought it would happen sometime in the spring or in the summer, but as the days went on and I was spending more time with my new daughter, I realized, and every time I was on the phone with my father, I would just think, he's dying, he's dying. Like, you have to get out there. And you know, he's been sick with his disease for many years, and he's kind of an ornery, obstinate man, and I think that keeps him living. And I hope that in a way, something else that kept him living was wanting to see how the story ended, the story of his son, and that was one ending.
How do you characterize the nature of the relationship now? I mean, obviously, it's much stronger as a result of the trip. But also, this must dredge up a lot of other stuff in the process of writing it.
Yeah, writing it was difficult, but I do my best thinking and probably in some ways my best living when I'm writing. And I came to understand my father as a flawed father who was heavily marked by Vietnam and some tragic childhood experiences. And, you know, now I can sit in a room with him and it's a good place to be. There's love. I hope that what he sees is me, his son, holding his granddaughter and the family continuing, the family line continuing, knowing his own flaws as a father and hoping that I will be a different kind of father, maybe the father that he'd aspired to at one time but failed to be, but knowing that I will rise higher.
How much of an eye-opener was this for your wife?
She'd only met my father once, and she knew a little bit of my family history, and she certainly knew my own personal history, and she was a great reader for me. And I think it was, you know, as difficult as it was for me to write, I think it was quite difficult for her to read, to sit with these things that I had sat with for many years. And she understood the need to write the story and to encapsulate it and to move on.
When you look at that moving on part, I mean, obviously, you don't know how all of this affects you, but you feel at peace with most things in your life now?
I do. I feel very much at peace. I'm especially happy as a new father. It's the most joy that I've ever experienced. I've had the best 9 months of my life since my daughter was born. It's an absolute blast being a father. I know it's a challenge, but I think of it I think of it as a way for me to be new and good each day, and that every day I can do something good as a father for my daughter. And when I do that, I do it well as a man and as a husband, and maybe even as a writer. But one thing, the day my daughter was born, she was born early in the morning, and later in the afternoon, I was sitting on a cruddy hospital room chair, and I achieved this lightness because I realized that I'm going to keep writing books, hopefully till the day I die, but I realized that nothing that I ever do, no book I ever write, will ever be as important as the kind of father I am to this little being in my hand, on my chest. And that freed me up, and that brought me a real kind of peace about writing, about being in the world. And in fact, I think I've done my very best writing since my daughter was born. She helped me achieve this kind of freedom from attachment and freedom from ego that's often attached to writing.
The name of the new book is Hotels, Hospitals, and Jails. It's published by 12. Anthony Swofford, I thank you very much for sharing with us and for being with us on the book show. A great pleasure, and best of luck with the book.
Thank you. My pleasure.
We enjoy hearing from our listeners about the show. You can email us at book@wamc.org, and you can listen again to this or find past book shows at wamc.org. Sarah LeDuc produces our program. Bookmark us for next week, and thanks for listening. For the book show, I'm Joe Donahue.